When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm John Quinn. I'm the Chief Investment Officer and General Partner of Decentral Park Capital. I've been in the crypto space since 2015 when I co-founded Storage Labs, which is a decentralized cloud storage provider. Prior to that, I was doing traditional finance. I was an investment banker at Credit Suisse and Fleming's, and I also did global markets at Deutsche Bank and also ran a $200 million private equity fund.
What is DeFi?
DeFi is short for decentralized finance. And so if you can imagine a financial primitive like lending or trading or insurance, that financial primitive is being boiled down into a protocol, much the way that TCP/IP is a protocol for the web. And within these protocols, they do one specific thing. But it really brings supply and demand together to interact with the protocol directly without any middlemen. We like to say that the middleman has been replaced with middleware. And what makes it so interesting as well is that it's open source and it's transparent and it's highly inclusive, such that anyone with a mobile phone and an internet connection can participate in this. And that's especially important when you think about there's 1.7 billion people globally that are unbanked. And now there's 3.5 billion people that have smartphones, which has doubled in the last 8 years. And with the advent of Skylink, you can see a future where everyone's going to have a smartphone, everyone's going to have internet, and they're going to be able to have banking services through decentralized finance. And what we believe in, part of our investment thesis, is what we're seeing now is basically the building of the backbone of the global financial network that's going to touch every human on the planet.
How do you value DeFi projects?
We're seeing a Cambrian explosion of projects in this space, and this is, you know, being buoyed by a large amount of capital flowing into the space. So total value locked is a metric widely used to measure how much collateral is in the ecosystem. Kind of went from $1 billion in January of last year to about $15 billion by the end of the year, now over $40 billion. We believe over $200 billion by the end of this year. So basically each protocol has a different value capture mechanism. And some of these assets are more, some of these protocols are more asset driven, and some of them are more cash flow revenue driven. And so it really depends on the type of business it is to basically understand the value capture mechanism within the protocol. But what we do is basically we look at the on-chain data to be able to measure what the asset flows are and the cash flows. And we ingest all that on-chain data and then do financial models on top of that basically mimic what you'd use in traditional finance, whether that be an asset-based methodology or a cash flow-based methodology. So it kind of depends based on the protocol.
Do we see product market fit for DeFi?
I think that when you start to see tens of billions of dollars flow through an ecosystem that and you know, each one of these has code that you know, ostensibly is hackable, and they haven't been hacked, then I think you are really starting to see product market fit. And once we get to 100 billion, I believe in the second part of this year, it'll be even more clear. But don't kid yourself. This is very early days. This is perhaps 92, 93 internet days. So we're at the very early stages. Only 1.5 million people globally have interacted with smart contracts using DeFi. So if you're looking at this video, you're one of the very first people to know about this. One of the great things about DeFi is all of the on-chain data is transparent and visible to anyone. So we basically ingest all of that on-chain data into our business analytics software infrastructure that we've built over the last 2 years. And basically do overlays of that on-chain data, whether that be an asset-based valuation methodology or a cash flow-based methodology, in order to basically use what are real cash flows and real assets flowing through them to establish what is fair market value in our view for what that token should be worth based on the value capture, based on the growth and the like. And then we see where the price is trading, because all the assets that we're targeting are traded assets. They may be illiquid, but they are traded. And so there's a price. And so then we're looking at the fair market value versus the price, whether there's a compelling opportunity for us to get involved or perhaps to exit a position.
What are some financial primitives being carried over into DeFi?
Well, last year we had some screaming winners in the lending space. We were early investors in Aave. And earned about 36 times our investment on that. We were also early investors in Nexus Mutual, which is an insurance primitive that also returned over 15x. So within the broader finance ecosystem, you can think of that being composed of hundreds, if not thousands, of financial primitives. What we're seeing is the replication of the traditional finance ecosystem now in DeFinance. And so your DeFi represents hundreds of financial primitives that will be built over the next year or two, 3 years, and they're composable. And so part of the network effect between these protocols is that you can kind of plug one into another, like link logs, and build other things. And once these protocols have, billions of dollars running through them and have not been hacked, then you can have some certainty that they can't be hacked. And then you can basically build financial products that compose multiple of these primitives. Ethereum, basically, was the first layer one chain that offered smart contracts, which basically enabled people to build applications on top of that. And unfortunately, is a victim of its own success. We've seen the theoretical limits be reached in terms of throughput, and now you're seeing massive gas costs and congestion in that network. Other protocols, a chain of chains, have kind of stepped into the fray, and they're basically helping do computations off chain or through other chains, and then connect back into the Ethereum network. So you're seeing chains like Binance, which are centralized, their chain, and then you're seeing things like Polkadot, which enable people to basically utilize the Ethereum network, but without the congestion, without the high gas fees.
What is Decentral Park Capital?
Decentral Park Capital is a digital asset manager. We're basically wrapping up our first fund and launching our second fund. It was born from friends and of mine and business associates that were seeking to get exposure to digital assets, folks that I've made money for in the past, and has grown to a team of six people and probably 10 by the end of this quarter. So it's been rapid growth in terms of our performance and assets under management. We currently manage about $60 million and we're targeting $75 million in this upcoming close. This fund is a 24-month fund for decentralized finance. And so we're going to be investing in assets. We're targeting assets that have market caps under $200 million. So these are assets that we believe that have 10x potential within the DeFi space. So we're not going to be there. There are assets that are multi-billion-dollar assets within DeFi. We were investing in those last year before they were multi-billion dollars. And what we're trying to do is identify the new tokens, the new financial primitives that have the potential to reach multi-billion-dollar capitalizations, but to get into them sub 200 million.
How does Decentral Park Capital monitor and analyze developments in the ecosystem?
It's drinking out of a fire hose. It's really difficult. There's now over 8,000 tokens, and so it's challenging. But we've built proprietary technology that basically helps us to ingest on-chain data and basically track that data and basically build our models for fair market value relative to the current price based on-chain data. And that's been really helpful because, for any given financial primitive, there might be 5 or 10 names that are competing in that space. And then we can basically plug all of them into our business intelligence platform and basically measure one against the other and see who's winning and start to make bets within that peer group. We're investing solely in liquid tokens. So generally these tokens have not been listed on Coinbases or Binances, but we're trying to basically identify them, and they're currently traded on decentralized exchanges, DEXs like Uniswap and SushiSwap, and we're basically buying them. We've developed proprietary technology to buy them, using traditional finance tools like TWAP and VWAP to get into relatively illiquid names. But we're targeting very early stage, but liquid tokens. So it's a contrast to venture capital, where you might have a 7-year hold period before you have liquidity. Here you have liquidity day one, but the liquidity might not be able to get in large numbers.
In what ways has the market changed compared to 2020?
2020 was really where DeFi started to get product market fit, went from $1 billion to $15 billion in total value locked, how much collateral was flowing through the ecosystem. Now we're seeing it going from, you know, $15 billion, already over $40 billion here this spring. And it looks like it's going to go, you know, well over $100 to $200 billion by the end of this year. There have been, you know, just because there's been so much capital flowing through it, there's more and more teams, there's more and more opportunities, people trying to fill in all the financial primitives that haven't already been spoken for. And then there's people that are building applications using these protocols that are almost like Lincoln logs, you know, adding lending plus insurance, and then creating a new financial product. And so it's quite interesting to see, you know, how the Lincoln logs are coming together and building financial products that have more application to a wider audience.
What valuation methods do you use?
We've built a business intelligence platform that we affectionately call the Whopper. So there was a computer in a movie called War Games with Matthew Broderick. And so that was kind of a riff on that. But the Whopper basically allows us to ingest on-chain data and be able to then do an overlay of financial valuation methodologies on top of that on-chain data. So we spend a lot of time, and we've, you know, been developing this over the last 2 years, and we're constantly refining it. But what it really does is helps us surface opportunities and things that we should be paying attention to. When something's growing, you know, 20-30% week over week, then it's going to pop up on the Whopper, and then we're going to say, okay, what's going on here? How does it look relative to its peer group? Why is this happening? And then perhaps we'll allocate more capital towards those opportunities. A lot of this is predicated on kind of product market fit and growth. And so this is really just a tool for us to be able to do the quantitative, okay, how are things moving? And then on top of that, have a qualitative overlay of like, okay, who's the team? What's the tech stack? You know, who you know, how are they addressing this market opportunity and the like? But yeah, so basically the Whopper is a very important tool, a proprietary tool for us to for our investment process.
What is your investment thesis?
Our thesis is that what we're seeing now is the underpinnings of a new global financial network. The connotation of that is quite massive. And if you think about it in terms of, you know, the World Wide Web and implications that had on multiple industries, the music industry being one of the most poignant, and how that disintermediated you know, labels. So if this does play out and we're starting to see early signals of traditional finance companies going in and seeking yield within the DeFi ecosystem, you know, we think that you know, that we're just really in the beginning. We're maybe in the fourth or fifth pitch of the first inning, to put it in baseball terms. So we think it's very, very early days, and this could be a multi-trillion-dollar industry within, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Are you investing in DeFi outside of the Ethereum blockchain?
We're definitely making investments outside the Ethereum ecosystem. We're targeting other layer one opportunities where basically they have financial primitives similar to those on the Ethereum network. And we're really just looking for things that have, you know, that basically create value to their users and that are showing strong signs of product market fit. But we're blockchain agnostic. We're trying to figure out what is actually of value and what is showing demonstrable traction.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Do fiat currencies ever go away?
I don't think that they fully go away, but I do think they're being disintermediated by this technology. And, you know, look at the U.S. dollar, you know, with 85% of global trade being done in dollars and the U.S. economy representing, you know, 20-ish percent and China taking over the first spot in global GDP, is that you know, sustainable long-term? I don't think so. China has been very, very successful building out their technology, their tech stack for blockchain. It's called BSN, the Blockchain Services Network. And they're going to use that for their trade finance with all their trade finance partners. So the you know, fiat is being digitized. And so there are central bank digital currencies like the digital yuan that are going to compete with non-sovereign digital currencies like blockchain and Ethereum. So I think they're going to coexist. But I do think that, you know, having a currency that's not beholden to a, you know, sovereign government does offer, that's based on code and math, does offer a lot of benefits, as we see now with Bitcoin having over $1 trillion market cap, you know, basically representing digital scarcity. And so, yeah, I think that fiat currencies, as long as there's aircraft carriers enforcing, you know, shipping lanes, there's going to be a fiat currency. But I do think that digital currencies are going to start to edge away on those on some of their turf.
Will traditional finance be disintermediated?
I've spent a lot of time in investment banks. I spent, you know, close to a decade in companies like Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, Fleming's. And I know I've seen how the sausage is made, and it's not that pretty. And there is a ton of waste within those organizations. So what is happening with DeFi is it's basically metal on metal, where supply meets demand, and all of that waste is compressed into the protocol. And there's a value capture within the protocol that basically the token holders of that protocol participate in. So, you know, I do think that traditional finance will be disintermediated, you know, partially from this. And I think they'll co-opt the technology over time. But, you know, what we're starting to see is that, you know, Fortune 500 companies are giving, you know, agents the ability to put their money, their treasury money, into DeFi to generate yield, to basically pull out crypto, convert back to dollars, and give back to their balance sheet. And so, you know, if that's, you know, just the first stages of that happening, really in a world devoid of yield, you know, you could see that happening, you know, basically because somebody has to, you know, there has to be a supply, you know, liquidity pools and the like in order to facilitate trading. You know, I think that people have a lot of liquidity, but they don't have any way to generate yield. And this is an opportunity for people to generate yield on that liquidity. And I think that'll be increasingly attractive for traditional finance companies. DeFi and basically decentralized finance has the potential to be as disruptive as the internet was to retail and the music industry, to finance, as these intermediaries are disintermediated.
How much do you expect the space to grow over the next few years?
If you have a macro view that we're in a risk on right now, then you want to basically be invested in, you know, because we're investing in the riskiest part of DeFi, you know, the early stage of DeFi. And so, you know, our view is that it's risk on until the Fed starts jacking rates, and the Fed has indicated that they're going to jack rates in 2023. So, you know, we're really trying to fit into that time frame and basically have a vehicle for people to express that view, to basically capture outsized returns in that window of opportunity before, you know, the Fed jacks rates and it becomes risk off.